always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday night by nobody. I am here riding solo for this recap of a loss that escalated quickly. Yep, that's how I'll say it. This game, the Lakers looked like they were in control for a little while, and then the second quarter happened, and then the third quarter happened, and then the fourth quarter came and went, and not enough changed. 135 to 117 was the final. The Lakers gave up 135 points to the Charlotte Hornets, who, granted, have been playing better basketball recently. They had beaten the Oklahoma City Thunder. They, I believe, also beat the Houston Rockets and played pretty well against the Clippers the other night as well. They are certainly turning a corner as an organization as they kind of move on from the Michael Jordan era. But still, giving up 135 points to the Charlotte Hornets, and you know, looking as feckless as the Lakers did defensively throughout basically the you know, three-fourths of this game, was something that pissed off the Lakers fans who were in attendance. And if you were paying attention, if you were watching the game from home and you were listening to Stu Lance there at the end of the game, you heard some frustration from him as well. So I thought that was kind of interesting too. So we're going to talk about this game. We're going to talk about some of the things that I liked from it, some of the stuff that I didn't like so much of, Gabe Vincent. And then we will go ahead and hit on as many of the trade rumors that we saw pop up over the course of the day. I did some calling around to you know, I'll tell you guys what, when I was working for Clutch Points, there was a lot more activity. Like I was, you know, kind of seeking out stories a lot more than I am now. Now I'm kind of reacting to stories and bouncing them off of the people that I know. And so I will kind of offer up a little additional context, on some of the stories that you guys saw over the course of the day, maybe some new morsels here and there. But for the most part, you know, this is posturing season. This isn't quite necessarily negotiating season. This is a different stage of the transaction window, but we'll go ahead and dive on into that as well. And then obviously over the course of the show, I will answer as many of your guys' questions that I can. Thought it was interesting, the reaction and the response to my fireside chat from basically right before the game, as the Dodgers signed Kyle Tucker. I thought it was really kind of interesting how many Lakers fans were like, yeah, let's go. And then like how many Lakers fans were also kind of defensive about it. That was also kind of interesting. So we'll go ahead and talk about that as well. So without any further ado, let's dive on in. After a quick reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. To those of you who are new around these parts, please hit that subscribe button and turn on your notifications as well, so as you guys know, as soon as I go live. And then, you know, tell your friends about the show, whether it's in video form, audio form, whatever. Tell all your friends that you love the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. Also, one more quick note. I sent out the first of what will probably be many clips of a conversation that Domin and I had for Offside. Basically, what we're doing is having like obviously not live, but, you know, recorded conversations about, you know, various topics surrounding the Lakers. And those conversations are kind of broken up into these like 2 or 3 minute clips, and they will go out on socials, on TikTok, and then eventually they are going to live exclusively on Offside. So make sure you guys are going to offside.gg to check out what we're building there and get your name on the wait list and get yourself ready for beta testing and then eventually like the official launch. So, and you know, obviously we have some fun announcements coming even beyond this one here over the next week or so. So keep an eye out for that. Let's dive on into yet another Lakers blowout loss. Again, 135 to 117 was the final here. The Lakers looked incredible in the first half. I really like the way that the starting unit has been playing recently. I am, you know, I do think Marcus Smart is getting a little gamey. He's Austin Reeves, take your time, obviously. Be super careful about this injury, this specific injury, seeing as you suffered it the one time, came back, and then suffered it even worse. I understand everybody being super careful here, but I also can't keep watching Marcus Smart play basketball to the extent that I've had to. So, but that starting unit, I thought, looked really good in that first quarter. Really active group. Ball was moving really well. They were getting out in transition. Second unit came in, and for a little while, it looked like they were going to follow up that effort with even more kind of the same stuff. I think that second unit desperately needs another ball handler, and I think that's where Austin, again, will really kind of help out. But, you know, because right now the primary ball handler, like they're doing whatever they can to stagger LeBron and Luka, but they really need that extra offensive punch that Austin provides. Mostly because the guy who's been trying to provide that offensive punch has been Gabe Vincent. And I made as many shots in that game tonight as he did, even including free throws. So, it's been pretty brutal watching Gabe since he got back from injury. And you want to give him a little bit of grace because you want let his feet get back underneath him. But also, he's Gabe Vincent, and I don't think he's very good at basketball anymore. So, that was, from the Lakers side of things, I thought the story in this one was the 3-point shooting kind of cooling down. I thought eventually the Lakers weren't able to pierce Charlotte's very switchy defense, and that really kind of wreaked havoc on their offensive rhythm. And then once the offensive rhythm went and Charlotte was able to get out in transition, game was over. Like, you look at Charlotte's shooting numbers, and they're also pretty astronomical. 20 of 43 from 3-point range is a pretty damn good shooting night. But also, I thought that like a lot of those 3-pointers came in with such great rhythm, whether they came in transition, semi-transition, in the half court. The Lakers were just always playing catch up, not just in terms of the scoreboard, but in terms of whatever Charlotte was trying to do. And I just, this was an ass kicking from the, I would say, because the Lakers looked really good for like the first half of the first quarter or so. But then from that point on, Charlotte started climbing back into the game and then really put the turbo button down, and the Lakers were just absolutely swarmed. So, this is an annoying one. I still say that Charlotte is a little underrated at this point. And I think like starting next year, they're going to be a real figure in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. So some of these losses might not look quite as bad, but still, I don't like how easily the Lakers just let go of the rope. Like it's just not a very good quality of any team: basketball, foosball, football, pool, tiddlywinks. It doesn't matter what you're playing. If you become accustomed to quitting to the extent that the Lakers do or are, there's just no getting around that. That's just who you are. And we are now, let's see, the Lakers are 24 and 15. That's 39 games. We are like almost halfway through the season. This is just who the Lakers are. All right. Man, I am dying and I am seeing some interesting comments here. I'm just going to get rid of this guy because don't need Diddy in my comment section. All right. I don't really want to talk much more about this game, be completely honest. We can give credit to Charlotte. We can, you know, continue. Well, I will say this about Gabe. I really hope like this is like the, you know, because I basically auto assign my thumbnails for YouTube. It'd be great if this was just like, if this was the thumbnail, like right, this right here, just like, why? This is so stupid. This feels great on my eyes though. But anyway, watching Gabe play, you'll see this sometimes, and I've made this point before, but you'll see this sometimes in smarter organizations, and especially organizations that have spent more time, you know, where the key interested parties have spent more time together. But every so often, you'll see a front office step in and help out its head coach. And that is exactly what needs to happen here with Gabe Vincent. It was a giant red flag. Like, I don't have enough red fabric in my house to, you know, piece together to make a big enough bright red flag. But it was a giant red flag that flew when Gabe Vincent came back and JJ Redick said, well, you know, we got to limit Gabe to 18 to 20 minutes or so while he works his way back from his injury. And it's like, you should, 18 to 20 minutes should be like desperation mode. You know, Luka fouled out, Austin fouled out, Bronny fouled out. Okay, I guess we have to play Gabe Vincent 18 to 20 minutes. And yet, like, that was on the low side of what JJ Redick would normally want to play him, apparently. Now, he played 15 minutes in this one and did plenty of damage in those 15 minutes. Here's Gabe's stat line. He played those 15 minutes, 0 of 7 from the field, obviously 0 of 3 from three-point range. He grabbed one rebound, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0 block shots, 0 turnovers, 4 personal fouls, and was a minus 15 in the game. The only player with a worse plus minus in this one was Rui Hachimura, who played 18 minutes in this one. And this is alarming. If you're like, if you're the Lakers and you've been trying to figure out a way to convince yourselves to keep Rui beyond this deadline, this is the game that should alert you to some of the concerns with Rui. Rui plays 18 minutes in this one, only shot the ball 4 times. All of his shots came from beyond the 3-point line. Means he spent no time attacking the rim. Did not get to the free throw line. Grabbed one rebound, dished out one assist, apparently blocked one shot. You know, I guess broken clocks are right twice a day. Had those 2 fouls and was a minus 17 in 18 minutes. Like, you want to look at like how Charlotte got back into the game. There you go. You have Gabe at minus 15. You have Rui at minus 18. Those are the 2 more talented players coming off of the Lakers bench. And those are the 2 guys who, like, you know, you would put out there for offensive punch with the second unit. And they both sucked. they were both terrible. And like for Rui, okay, yeah, all right, he's coming back from an injury and maybe he's kind of, you know, gradually getting himself back into game shape or whatever, into game rhythm and all of that. But also we know that Rui tends to float and he tends to sulk when he comes off of the bench. And he is, I guarantee you, Gabe or Rui has seen all of the headlines and all the tweets and all the analysis from everybody saying, yeah, you know what? I think Jake Laravia makes a lot more sense for that starting group. And then you add on top of that all of the trade rumors. Here's what I'll say. I'm going to get to this more in a little bit. But according to the people that I've spoken to, the Lakers are basically treating Rui like they treated Kendrick Nunn that one year and like they treated Talen Horton Tucker that other year, where it was just like, Rui in a first. What can we get for Rui in a first? And, you know, you know he's hearing all of this noise, and he was brutal tonight. Absolutely brutal. He floated for most of the game, and then on the opportunities that he got, he just clanked them and was never really, like, never played with any force. Rui Hachimura is one of the more physically, like, gifted players currently wearing a Lakers uniform. And he may as well be fucking 5'10", 135 pounds with how little he utilizes his big frame. You know, he's just popcorn muscle. And it's just, it's a bummer to watch him. But anyway, he and Gabe were terrible. And I think that was probably most of the story in telling, you know, this one and trying to analyze like how Charlotte got back into the game. Those are the two guys who were supposed to be leading the second unit, and they both sucked. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into the assortment. You know what? Let's do this. I'm going to dive into some of your guys' super comments, which means I get to play this bad boy. Fuck watching! All right, so the first super comment, because we have five of them. This is why I'm kind of diving in a little early. Brandon Omang starts us off. JJ sucks. Trade Gabe, Max, and Rui. Rui is useless off the bench. Gives you nothing outside of three-point shooting, and that's if he's hitting. DeAndre Ayton is soft, and his motor is shit. He got benched again. Smart, I don't know what he's doing. They need trades. All right. I thought of this. I was going to send out a tweet, but there was no way to like word it that wouldn't get quote tweeted and I would get canceled over it. But I don't know how many of you people are dog people. If you ever watch a, like a Great Dane or like, you know, like any like really, really, really big dog, like Goofy Big, not like Rottweiler Big, but like Goofy Big. If you ever seen a really like Goofy Big dog play with a, you know, very small puppy, they're always kind of like super cautious, you know, and like the puppy's biting at their ankles and stuff. And they're just like, I don't want to step on you. You know, that's what it's like watching DeAndre Ayton play basketball, where he's like, you know, somebody like steps in front of him. He's like, I'm sorry. I can't, I don't want to knock you over. You know, like when was the last time you saw DeAndre Ayton like commit a charge? Not take a charge, but commit a charge. Knock somebody over. When was the last time you saw that? When was the last time you saw DeAndre Ayton swing his elbows and accidentally catch somebody? Like, your center should be feared. It's the biggest, he's the biggest person on the basketball court. And yet, this dude is soft as Charmin whenever I watch him play out there. You know? It's just, he hasn't, like, I don't know. The Lakers are shopping him as well. And it's just like, or at least if they aren't shopping him, because his market isn't very good, because nobody wants to pay him his next contract. But they are actively looking to, you know, replace him. Because what the Lakers are looking to do, I think the Lakers are pretty clear eyed as far as like, they're probably too far to fix this roster. But what they are looking to do is to, you know, I think by the end of this transaction window, they would like to add one starter to this group, whether it's the starting backcourt mate with, or, you know, wing with Austin and Luka, whether it's, you know, swapping out Rui for somebody. but you know, I think probably likeliest is swapping out the center spot, or at least positioning themselves to swap out the center spot. I think Misi is somebody that they liked back at the during that draft. And apparently he's on the market again. So that's somebody that I would probably say put on your radars. But yeah, like I'm watching DeAndre Ayton play basketball and it's just like, dude, knock somebody over one time. Like play with force, play through somebody one time. I grew up watching Shaq, man. This dude used to put like poor Dikembe Mutombo was like the nicest human being in the history of the NBA. And Shaq had zero problem whatsoever caving in his face with his elbow every single time he got an opportunity to. You know, like Shaq used to play against those Sacramento Kings at a time when the Matrix came out. I think it was the Matrix 2, you know, the second Matrix movie, where all of the Agent Smiths, I believe who it was, would like dive on top of Neo. And then you would hear, and all the Agent Smiths would like go flying into the air. That's what it was like watching Shaq play against the Sacramento Kings. And it was especially great because those Sacramento Kings all wore black uniforms. So they would all go like, and then Shaq would just drop step and all of them would go flying into the Sacramento night. And I miss having a center who played with that kind of force. Even Bynum on occasion would swing around and have no problem whatsoever picking up an offensive foul just to send a message to whoever was guarding him. Like, hey man, stand a little too close again, one more time, see what happens. Right. It's like a good pitcher, you know, will waste a free runner on first base from time to time. If it means those batters staying honest and laying off the inside part of the plate. DeAndre Ayton needs to learn that at some point, man, like you do need to at some point kick some ass, and it's just not happening. But anyway, I don't know. My concern with JJ Redick is, I think it's twofold. I think it needs to be pointed out. I don't think this roster is good enough. And I do think he is doing as much as he can to navigate a flawed roster. I would say I think he's doing as much as he realistically can to navigate that flawed roster. I think there are other coaches that would probably be doing more. Like it's hard for me to say, you know, oh man, poor Lakers and their injury situation. When you look over at Denver and they're staying afloat without Jokic and without Brown and without, they didn't have Aaron Gordon for a while. They don't have Cam Johnson. And, you know, you look over there and they've been able to maintain their spot in the seedings. Meanwhile, the Lakers, like every time they lose any rotation player, you're like, oh man, this is going to be brutal. I hope they can handle this, you know? So, yeah, I think the Lakers, you know, look, they are a flawed team. JJ Redick is a second year coach who I don't think has made enough progress in that second year. And this is kind of what that would eventually look like. But I do think this trade deadline, if the Lakers don't pick up a starter for now and for the future, then it would be a pretty disappointing trade deadline. Justin Tindall, Walter has huge pockets with Dodgers. How will that happen here? Will he be willing to go into the second apron? Pelinka and JJ have to go after the season. All right. Well, as far as him going into the second apron, I think he will be willing to go into the second apron, but I do think eventually, like, when you go into the second apron, you basically are admitting and telling the rest of the league, all right, we have a 2 or 3 year window where we have to go it right now with this roster as it exists. Because once you go into the second apron, it becomes damn near impossible to improve your roster. So I do think Mark Walter will eventually be willing to go into the second apron, but I think they will still be very choosy with the caliber of rosters they're willing to do that with. And I think that's smart. Now, as far as like the organizational impact that Mark Walter is going to have. Like, that is where, like, I just think it's, you know, doing this in the middle of the season is basically impossible. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry I'm rubbing my eye. It's turning like beet red on the air for you guys. I apologize. I'm dying. But as far as like the organizational improvements, like, it's really difficult to do that in the middle of the season, because all of the people, not most, all of the people that you would be looking to add or poach, they are all currently employed. And now there might be a couple of exceptions out there, right? Like, if Mark Walter basically said, hey, JJ, your coaching staff needs, you know, a little bit of help, what if we bring in Mike Malone as a consultant for right now, and then after the season, make him like your associate head coach, or basically replace, you know, like Scott Brooks with Mike Malone or something like that, you know? And that's only if Mike Malone is even interested in that kind of a gig, because he is probably positioning himself for his next head coaching opportunity. He's going to get another one. So, but like, those are the things that, you know, this summer, you know, do I expect the Lakers to go out and jump right into the second apron in this first offseason? Absolutely not. It would be stupid of them to do that. But what I do expect of them is fully fill out your scouting department, fully fill out your analytics department, fully fledge out your player development team, hire a shooting coach, you know, continue to improve as it pertains to your med team and your physical therapy team and your training staff and your conditioning coaches and your dietitians and all of that. And make sure that they're on the same page to, I think, a better degree than they are right now with the head coach. Like, those are the things that, you know, if they don't happen this summer, that would be a pretty bright red flag. I would be shocked if they don't, but that would be something to really keep an eye out for. As far as like roster improvements and stuff like that, it's just not baseball. It's not as easy as it is in baseball. Especially seeing as like the Dodgers exist in this time when all of these teams are like giving themselves every excuse not to pay up for players, it makes the Dodgers that much stronger, right? And so, like, I'm not expecting the Lakers to be the type of dominant that the Dodgers are in terms of the free agent market and player acquisition and just the way that this roster looks heading into next season. That's just not a possibility in the NBA. But, you know, one of the reasons that the Dodgers look the way that they do is because, like, one of the funniest aspects of what the Dodgers are doing right now is that not only do they have the best roster in Major League Baseball, but they also have the best minor league system, you know, and in baseball, you know, to those of you who don't pay attention to this kind of thing, in baseball, you have multiple minor league teams. So you have, you know, double A and triple A and single A, and you have select teams, and you have all these other, you know, teams that make up your entire minor league system. And, you know, smart teams over the years have basically said, all right, we are going to double, triple, quadruple, quintuple, you know, down on filling out our minor league system, so that when it comes time, we can either bring players up from those systems at times of need, or we could flip those players just in case, like, you know, Scooball becomes available. So those are the things that, like, if you're trying to find ways that the Lakers might start to look like, or might start to operate like a Mark Walter team, those are the kinds of things to look for. The South Bay Lakers will look very different. And the minor league system down there with the South Bay Lakers will look very different. You won't have situations here where, like, you know, your backup center is hurt, and rather than play the two-way center that is in the organization and Drew Timmy, you go super duper small and bleed out points that way. Rather than have that happen, you would have an organization be put together in a way, and rather than have like Jay Huff leave for nothing whatsoever, rather than have Scottie Pippen Jr. leave for nothing whatsoever, Jordan Goodwin leave for nothing whatsoever, the two-way guys that you have and the guys in your G League team that you have will get better opportunities and more organized opportunities, and you'll have a clearer understanding of who they are, so that if they do leave, you'll know that, all right, we at least have to get some value for these guys before they go. Those are the things that, you know, Mark Walter organizations are much better at than Jeannie Buss and Jim Buss organizations have been since, you know, Dr. Buss passed away. All right. Next question here comes from, Justin Tindall, who says a podcaster can't motivate. Who'd have thought, hey, how dare you? I think I'm pretty Oh, you're talking about JJ. Kidding. It's hard for me to hold. Like, I don't think JJ is very good. Like, I'm just going to come out and say that. I think that, I think that he's a little in over his head, and the Lakers didn't supply him with enough coaching talent on that, on, you know, with his assistant coaches, to help him become as good as he needs to be. That said, I also think he was put into a damn near impossible situation. LeBron James at this stage of his career, not the most coachable guy, right? Luka Doncic, since he's gotten into the NBA, he's used to a certain level of coaching, and I think he's more open to, you know, harder coaching with his national teams and stuff like that, because that's how that culture kind of operates. But what the Lakers really lack is a top-down leadership culture, and I don't know how you build that with a guy who is literally in the second year of his coaching career, including freaking YMCA ball. Like, this guy, you know, JJ Redick, this is the tough spot to be in, and you know, you could make the argument that the Lakers set him up to fail. And yeah, some of that reflects a little bit on him because it's literally him coaching, but I think a lot more of it reflects on the organization that thought it was a good idea to employ a rookie coach on a LeBron James, Anthony Davis team. Remember, that's the team that hired him in the first place, because then eventually they bring in Luka, and you know, you have these crazy sky-high expectations, and you have a guy who's learning on the job to manage those expectations. Justin again writes, a part of me doesn't want Pelinka to do any trades because he will overpay just like usual. Get a real head coach and GM after the season. Haven't had a good head coach since Vogel. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd be curious, like, who would be available after this season, who would actually replace JJ Redick. I mean, I guess your first step would be replacing Rob Pelinka. And unless you're willing to, you know, literally trade for Sam Presti, that, you know, because that eventually is the Mark Walter move. Like, it's going out and getting Sam Presti. That's who Andrew Friedman was. You know, I guess you could have maybe made the case that, like, hiring Presti would have been like hiring Theo Epstein back in the day, you know, coming off of the run that he had with Chicago and then with Boston and stuff. But Andrew Friedman, you know, he was considered one of the brightest minds in the sport at the time. And the Dodgers hired him and were like, hey, bring all of that small market mentality and management of the margins over to us as well. But also, we're going to be capable of dropping the atomic bomb on everybody by going out and getting a Shohei Ohtani, by going out and getting a Kyle Tucker, going out and getting Yamamoto and all of these guys that they've gotten over the course of the last few years or so, you know. And eventually that bill is going to come due, and maybe eventually we're in for a down period with the Dodgers as well. But this up here has been really, really fun. A hell of a lot more fun than the Dodgers have been for the last however many years. Or than the Lakers have been the last however many years. That's what I should have said. Justin, again, thank you, Dr. Buss, for what you did for the franchise, but your daughter has made it mediocre. Want Jeannie out, want Rob out, JJ, Linda, Kurt, your call, Walter. Here's what I'll say. I am out of tissues. Great. Here's what I'll say. The point that I made on my offside video today, right before the game, how my point was that like Mark Walter was applying pressure to the Lakers by way of Dodgers success. And because like at the end of the day, to quote Rob Pelinka, you can't buy a house that isn't for sale. And if Mark Walter wanted to buy the Lakers, but the only way he could buy the Lakers was to, you know, be like, if the only way that he would be put in that position was, you know, needing to buy them, but also keep Jeannie Buss in her position for at least a little while, then what do you do if you're Mark Walter, right? Like you say, this sucks. Can we fast forward? Like, is there anything that we can do? Maybe the team, you buy the team and then you approach the league and you say, hey, is there any loophole here that you can help me with? But for the most part, if Jeannie says, no, I am only selling if you allow me to stay on and allow me to keep Rob for the next, 3 to 5 years or so. And if you're Mark Walter, you basically say like, okay. And then you figure it out from there. And so, but what you can do if you're Mark Walter, and I do find myself wondering if this is what he's doing, what you can do is basically say like, all right, you're running him, but just so you know, I'm going to set the bar really fucking high with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have won back-to-back championships. I think they've won 3 out of the last 5 World Series. They could be the first team in like 30, however many years to win back-to-back-to-back World Series. Like, if you're Mark Walter and you want everybody to be having this conversation and you want all of the super comments across all of the podcasts to be some version of what Justin wrote here, right? How he just wants and how every Lakers fan just wants Mark Walter to take over. This is how you would do it. You would basically run the Dodgers as the behemoth that they have become. And by the way, right before the Lakers trade deadline, you would go out and sign the top free agent in baseball and still have ammunition to trade for the best or second best pitcher in baseball. Like that's what applying indirect pressure would potentially look like. And I kind of find myself wondering if that's what he's doing. And maybe he can do this to such an extent that the noise gets so loud that eventually Jeannie just kind of throws up her hands and says, you know what? You know what you're doing over there. What can you bring over here? Or at the very least, you have so much success with the Dodgers running things a certain way that you can approach Rob Pelinka and be like, hey, this is how I want this organization to run. I know you have been allowed to operate with the thinnest front office in the league, but we are not doing that anymore. And if Rob, I don't think he would, because I think what matters to him more than anything is just keeping his job. If Rob protests at all, you say, do you want this job? and you apply pressure that way. And I do find myself wondering, because things often tend to be more connected than people think. I do find myself wondering, I have found myself wondering, hey, is this what it kind of sort of seems to be? I hope so. I genuinely hope so. All right, next one. Man, we got a lot. Thank you guys for all of these. Holy cow. Let's see. Let's run UNLV. The next 5 years of Luka Ball will feel like the frustrating AD Bron era. Maybe Bron is so frustrated because he sees Luka's work ethic. They're going nowhere. I don't think that you're completely off base, but I think you're getting close to off base. Here's my thing. I think LeBron is far more frustrated over no longer having any organization that he would step into and run the way that he has over the last 15 years or so of his career, right? Like, he doesn't run things with the Lakers anywhere near as emphatically as he used to. If he goes to Cleveland, he wouldn't be handed the keys there. And if he goes to Cleveland, it would probably have to be as like a buyout, which already inherently affects, already affects his standing there. If he goes to Golden State, that Steph's team, you know, so like I think LeBron is far more kind of frustrated over the situation that he finds himself in at the end of his career. But I also think that like his competitive juices are also flowing, and he's kind of looking around here, and it's like and like I think there's probably overwhelming frustration at the fact that like how have I had Anthony Davis and Luka Doncic's teammates over the last 5 years or so and not mattered in the title conversation? How does that even fucking happen? We even have like a pretty damn good third best player here with Austin, or second best, depending on your standing now. How did this happen? And how is the person responsible for this happening still employed? Like, I think that's probably what LeBron is far more frustrated over, even over the, you know, annoyance that he has that, like, you know, he's looking at the finish line and the whole league is kind of looking at him like, hey, man, are you going to reach the finish line? And like, but like, what it really kind of comes down to, if you were to inject him with some truth serum, is like, I wonder. Because he has never applied the same kind of pressure on the Lakers that he did in Miami, that he did in Cleveland twice. And I do find myself wondering a lot if LeBron wishes he had applied more of that pressure. Hell, I find myself wondering if I wish LeBron had applied more direct pressure, not passive aggressive, not the maybe it's me tweet that he sent out that one time. No, I mean public pressure by way of the way that his contracts were set up, you know, the kind of tantrums that he would sometimes throw on social media and stuff like that. Like, he did not do nearly as much of that. The kind of pressure that would come by way of like, hey, you know what? Maybe this just isn't the spot for me. Maybe we need to start looking for the next spot. You know, like that kind of pressure. LeBron never did that here with the Lakers. I would love to know why. I sincerely would love to know why. But he's never done that. And I do kind of wonder now that he's nearing the end of his tenure here, not just with the Lakers, but nearing the end of his career, if he feels like he might have missed an opportunity by not applying more pressure to the Lakers organization. But like, you know, to finish off that last point, maybe there's some annoyance at Luka's work ethic, but Luka's been pretty fucking good, man. Like, you know, I have my concerns with Luka Ball as being like the main diet or the protein in the Lakers diet, but I don't know. I think LeBron would maybe like the Lakers to be a little less heliocentric. heliocentric, but I think there's more annoyance in like in a macro sense than it is like micro. Gosh, come on, Luka, pass the ball. I don't necessarily see that. Let's run UNLV continues. Could Jokic lead this roster to a championship? He could. And Luka is just as, if not more talented than Jokic. Our franchise leader is lazier than Harden, or is a lazier Harden. That seems harsh because like Harden has his jersey retired in a strip club. Like maybe that isn't, I mean, it takes work ethic to do that, I guess, but, could Jokic lead this team to a championship? I'm going to say no. You know what? I'm going to ask Adam that sometime. I'll text him tomorrow when I know he and I are both awake. But I don't think Jokic could win a championship with this roster because there's not enough athleticism. There's not enough finishing. Again, it's like I've said the last couple weeks or so, it's like, it's kind of wild, right? That the Lakers suck at shooting and aren't athletic. You have to be one or the other. You have to accidentally stumble into one or the other. But the Lakers somehow figured out a way to do neither. And so like, I don't think that Jokic would win a championship with this roster, not competing against that Oklahoma City Thunder team. You know, he didn't win a championship last year. And I would say that roster was probably a little bit better than this current Lakers roster. So yeah, I don't want to go too overboard on Luka. I to me the focus is on the organizational shortcomings. Gorilla the Conqueror, get rid of the coaching staff and hire Mike Malone. I could see it. Mike Malone had a good rapport with Jokic while they were there together. And he is the kind of hard ass who would maybe hold Luka accountable for some of the defensive concerns. That's my biggest concern with JJ Redick, is I just don't think he is capable of holding Luka or LeBron or Austin all that accountable. And I just think you're dead on arrival if your head coach can't at least every so often point out, hey man, you got to make that rotation. Hey man, stop turning the ball over. Hey man, is that the shot we needed there? Like at some point your head coach needs to be able to say that to your best player. And I just don't think JJ Redick has the amount of experience necessary to be able to do that with Luka or LeBron, maybe with Austin, because you know, the two, because Austin is not like in the stratosphere of a LeBron James or a Luka Doncic, but still like somewhere in there, he needs to be able to rein those guys in. And he's just never shown inability to, or a willingness to. Ryan Lucas, how much influence will Magic have on Rob and JJ? Ooh, that is actually a really good question, because Magic, right, is now technically a minority owner because of his partnership with AEG and Guggenheim and Mark Walter and that entire crew. I will say this, though. I think that Magic is probably, you know, self-aware enough to be like, well, no, I take that back. I don't think self-awareness is really much of a strength for him. But like Magic, at the very least, has to recognize the setup that exists in, you know, with the Dodgers, and, you know, be able to, you know, like with Mark Walter. If Mark Walter says, hey, I want to build out the infrastructure of this organization, you could be a part of that if you want. You could be seen as a consultant. You can be one of the voices in the room. But look at how we're running the Dodgers. this is how I want to run the Lakers. And I don't think Magic Johnson would get in the way of that. I think he would probably legitimately feel like he should be one of those voices that really, really matter. But I think overall, I think that everybody involved here would be wise to just follow the blueprint that the Dodger blueprint, right, that has been built since Mark Walter took over there, and just try to replicate that to whatever whatever extent you can here with the Lakers. But look, if it comes, like, I'll say this, I'm sure I know what Magic Johnson's vote will be at the time, or when the time comes to make a decision on Rob Pelinka's future. I don't think he'll, you know, try all that hard to keep Rob around. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. I wasn't able to get to all of the trade rumor stuff, but here's some good news. So my son has been sick. You guys have heard it in my voice. I have been sick all week this week. I'm starting to feel a little bit better, not a ton better, but my son is on the mend and he will be able to go back to daycare tomorrow. So outside of a couple errands, I'm pretty much free to do whatever I want. And I'm thinking I might pop on here and address the trade rumor stuff that I wasn't able to get to tonight. So keep an eye out for that. I'll probably do that sometime around the time that I would normally host an episode of The Hook or something like that. And until then, or until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.